λίγο.
Μαραμπόλα, ιό.
Welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. Thank you for tuning in tonight for this very special show I'm doing for Lane Redman and her Kickstarter program to fund a film, Oxé Orixá, Dreaming Awake, the Gods and Goddesses of Brazil, an illuminated film transmitting the dance, drumming, and chants of the Orixás and their living presence in modern Brazilian culture. And you heard a cut of Lane's opening the show called Yamayá. The tradition of Candomblé preserves the ancient role of powerful priestesses along with priests in service to both goddesses and gods. The oldest spiritual complexes in Bahá'í Brazil are headed by priestesses. I'm a bit familiar with this because I wrote a little bit about it in my Sacred Places of Goddesses book in the country of Brazil. I hope you'll check it out. The music of the entire world has been influenced by the music of Africa, yet the African religious traditions that created the source of this are suppressed and not recognized in the same way that other religious traditions are. In the U.S., it was stamped out as voodoo and devil worship, even as the rhythmic and melodic structures became the roots of jazz, funk, rock, rhythm and blues, and formed the heart of popular dance. What would our lives be like without these rhythms? Well, those are the words of Lane Redman describing the importance of this music of the gods and goddesses of Brazil. She needs no introduction, so let me welcome back to the show Lane Redman, author of When the Drummers Were Women, A Spiritual History of Rhythm. Hi, Lane.
Karen, I am so grateful to you for having a special show for me to talk about Oxé Orixá and the gods and the goddesses of Brazil, and also the thing that I'm probably most well-known for is the ancient tradition of frame-drumming priestesses from the Mediterranean world. And
well,
that's
we've played some of your music on the show. Thank you for letting us use that. And, that's more from that region of the world, the Mediterranean.
It is. Most of my work has been based there. However, my last three CDs I've made in Brazil with a core of Brazilian musicians, and certainly the percussion core is Brazilian, but also Tommy B, who's been on many of my CDs going back to the mid-90s, he's on them, and Amit Chatterjee and Steve Gorn. I'm still using musicians from all over the world, and also invoking Aphrodite used the women students I've been working with in Cyprus for many years. They chanted ancient Greek text on that CD. But I've been spending my time between Brazil and the Mediterranean world, if not there actually, then in study for I guess 30 years now. And I was so moved by the traditions in Brazil that I sold my house here in the United States and moved there and bought a place to live there, yes. However, I could never get a permanent visa. I now know what it's like to be an illegal alien and to not be able to get my papers and not be able to stay, even after I started having health problems and was being treated in Brazil. I had to get, special permission to stay, and, I had to go through what a lot of people have to go through in this country who have moved here and are trying to live here. And I tell you, it's really eye-opening, and I was never able to learn to speak Portuguese fluently. I just, as hard as I tried, I was not able to learned that language very well. And so I just sort of moved, drawn there by the music and the dance. And I was just so deeply moved by it that I moved there without being able to speak the language.
Wow.
Anyway,
well, you were a brave lady. That's what Joseph Campbell calls following your bliss. You really you really did it, didn't you?
Well, Karen, let me tell you. I have followed my bliss. It's not blissful often. I'm glad that I've done it, and I've lived a, I have to say that I feel that my life has been remarkable, but it's been very, very hard and very challenging, and it seems probably a lot more fun than it actually has been. But I sort of thrive on it. And I've been very happy making a fusion of what I've been able to piece together of the ancient traditions in the Mediterranean world around the oldest known drum, the frame drum, that was played primarily by women, and predominantly by women who were spiritual leaders and priestesses in the ancient world from, we don't know how far back it goes, but we do know from around 3000 BC up to about 300 or 400 AD or Common Era that the drummers were predominantly women. And they
were. So now
we're
talking about in South America as well as the Mediterranean?
No. I'm talking about the Mediterranean. And often, you know, that's where I concentrated on. And there, the world is wide, and the frame drum is the oldest known drum anywhere around the world that's been found so far. And there are traditions in other parts of the world that I have not been able to research thoroughly, especially in Asia. Recently I had someone sadly asking me why I was excluding Asian frame drums. It's not that I've excluded them. I haven't been able to get to that part yet. And in fact, we've been creating a nonprofit called When the Drummers Were Women, which is the archive for my slide collection. And we hope to make it somewhat like Wikipedia, sort of Drumopedia, so that people can add in frame drum images from all over the world. Because I've been working on this since probably 1981, and it's a massive job. And I have people who volunteer who come over here and sit with me, Mariah Epps, Helen Hollifield, and we've really worked on getting these images organized. And it's a huge job. And I have to say, I've been at it for so long, in some sense, it's my past. And I have had a lot of health challenges, as a lot of people know. For the last 4 years, I've had cancer off, come and go. And I feel that I'm feeling great. I feel really fantastic. And
you sound
really good. I know, and everybody thinks I seem really good and vital, and I feel that way. But going through all this, I'm just very, very clear that we all have a terminal an expiration date, and it's very real to me now. It's not a frightening thing, but I want to, I definitely am keeping the archive going, but I also want to finish this project that I started in 2006 in Brazil. And it was, if your listeners can go to my website at laneredmond.com, they'll see the video that Daniel Sabio and I created for this fundraiser to finish this project. And it explains how at first I just thought I was going to videotape the amazing choreographer, Los Angeles Silvestri's dance classes. I met her, and her dance classes are based on the traditional movements of the Orishas. And the Orishas are the ancient Yoruban from Africa, gods and goddesses that came to Brazil, which was the largest place of importation of people forced into slavery in the North and South hemispheres of North and South America. And Brazil today in Bahia, which is the place I'm so attracted to, people, 97% of the population and by identify themselves as African heritage. And it's the largest concentration of people of African heritage outside of Africa. And the history there was quite different than what happened here in the United States. The African traditions did have to fuse with the Catholic traditions. And often the African deities were syncretized or hidden behind the Christian saints or Jesus or Mary or God. But and today it's much more overt that the deities are African. Yet I find that many people that follow these traditions, and it's called Candomblé, which is similar to Santeria in Cuba and Voodoo in Haiti, and there are traditions also in Puerto Rico that have taken the African traditions and fused them with indigenous people and with Catholicism. I find that many of the people of Candomblé also go to church, to Catholic church. So it's really a blend in many ways. And there has been suppression for these practices, but they have survived to the present day. And many of the houses, the sacred houses called the Teherus, are headed by women priestesses. And so for me, I've spent the last 30 years studying these remnants of priestesses from the ancient Mediterranean world. So it was fascinating to me to come face to face with these traditions headed by priestesses today. And it's really a fusion of European, Portuguese, and African traditions. I mean, they're predominantly African, but you can see the Portuguese influence too. And this is extremely interesting to me. And these women are very powerful, and they are also oracles, just like many of the priestesses in the ancient Mediterranean world who played the frame down. Now, a big difference is that women do not play the drums in the Candomblé tradition. Although I never had any problems with any of the drummers teaching me to play the rhythms or play the drums from Candomblé, although I did not make a study of that. I learned some rhythms. I did a little bit of work on that. But basically what I do is take the influence and the rhythms and the feelings and let that focus through my frame drum. So they're not exactly the same, just like the Mediterranean traditions are not exactly the same. And my original teacher was Glenn Velez, who created a fusion. So I never learned a specific tradition. So I've always felt that it was fine that I could fuse traditions.
Well, Lane, before we, I can tell you have a lot to say, and before we go too far, a couple things. First, thank you for some of those pronunciations. Candomblé, I've never actually heard someone say it before. I've only seen it written, and so thank you for that. And just so that listeners are sort of brought up to speed with what's going on here, let's sort of start at the beginning, because I feel like we may be jumped in the middle, and you know, and there's just so let's start at the beginning. You're on the show tonight because you're trying to get this Kickstarter program funded. So the Kickstarter program, why don't you for people who don't know anything about this, just a little bit of background. I mentioned the name of it. I probably did a murderous job.
saying the
correct terms. But let's start at the beginning and sort of fill in the gaps. And so the Kickstarter program. What is it? What do you need? What inspired it? And then we'll get a little bit more into, you know, the priestesses of the Mediterranean drum versus the priestesses of today in Brazil, okay? Because it's, you know, let's not make it a hodgepodge. Let's sort of do it in a step-by-step process here. Forgive me, I'm a Virgo. It's a curse and a gift.
That's great, honey, and thank you. I think I always go back to the frame drum because that's the basis of my attraction to rhythm. But a Kickstarter is a new sort of concept that's really come into being over the last couple of years. It's called crowdsourcing. And it's really an amazing way to fund creative projects. Now, there are many different sites that you can do this through, Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and there's others. And what you do is you go to the site and register, and you create your project. And it took Daniel and I 2 months to create our project. You have to write it. It's a tremendous amount of work writing it up. And you have to create your video that promotes it. And, you know, it took us a lot of time working on this video. And it helps you get very clear about what you're doing. And then what happens is you create pledge levels for people to pledge to this project. And on Kickstarter, you pick your goal and the numbers of days, and you have to reach your goal once you start. You can't change the amount that you said you were going to raise, and you can't change the days. So right now, we have pledged $20,457, but our goal is $30,050. And unless we reach that within our 17 days, we won't get anything.
So you're short about, $10,000?
Yeah, just under $10,000. And I know that we'll raise it, but it's a lot of money to raise. And by this time, many people who are connected to me through my email list and through Facebook have pledged. So we need that last $10,000 to be raised. And we have incredible pledges. And I feel like we studied many projects on Kickstarter, and I feel like the pledges that we offered are of real value. Even for $1, you get the song that opened your program, a download of that song, Yimanja, the Goddess of the Sea. And for $10, you get the whole recording of 8 Condemblé classics. And this is the only way that you will get this music for at least a year. We're not going to release it until way after the film has been released. So for $10, there's a download of these 8 classical chants to the gods and goddesses. And one is the call that opens the ceremony where you call all the gods and goddesses to come. And it's sung by Gilmar Sampaio, who's a priest of Condemblé, an amazing singer and dancer. He's also a Western ballet master. He's an amazing, amazing person, and he's been involved in the project. Like I said, Jose Angelo Silvestri, an amazing choreographer who worked originally with Ballet Folklorica da Bahia and now is based in the United States but works all over the world, started this project with me. And we have Mariela Santiago, who's a fabulous singer. She did a lot of the arrangements of the vocals. So what we have, these 8 traditional songs you could hear in almost any Condemblé house.
And that's but for $10. And so what are some of the other pledge amounts?
Well, that's for the download, a high-quality download. And then at $15 is the CD with postage paid. And let's see, after that, it goes on up to $10,000. But at $25, there's the high-quality download of the film when we complete it and the CD. And then at $30, we have I started creating a Bahian percussion instructional DVD. It's focused primarily on pandeiro, the frame drum from Brazil, but also surdo and tamborim, and that is only available. I will probably never sell that DVD, and that is only available as a pledge for, you know, a download for $30. Or at $35, you get the real DVD and the CD. And it goes on up and up, and we have special things for drum lovers, of course. We have all the recordings of the 8 classics. We have all the – I filmed all the drummers. So anybody that is a stick drummer, and three of them are with hands, can really learn a lot by watching this and hearing the songs. So that's a bonus DVD, I think, that goes at the $85 level. So
lots of unique opportunities
and
on all of these pledge levels.
You can have me Skype in to any kind of gathering or class or lecture that you want, and I can either do the frame drum lecture for you, or I can show parts of Ashe Orisha, or it's up to you what you want. You know, I can do the Bee Priestess lecture, so people can gather together and have me do that for
have
the $500 plus.
Well, just for kicks, what possibly could you give for $10,000?
Well, the $10,000 ones is you meet us in Brazil.
Wow.
And while we're filming in January, and we take you everywhere.
Wow.
You know, to Candomblé ceremony, to the percussion department at UFBA, to community drum groups, sit on live recording sessions at the studio we work at, ride the historic schooner around the bay, see performances of Jidá, the female percussion ensemble, and also the amazing Ballet Folklorica of the Bahia. Many of the musicians and some of the dancers are in the film. So, you know, and then be at our premiere in Asheville, North Carolina, where I'm living now. So anyway, it's an amazing thing.
You mentioned you sold your house and you bought a house down there. So do you go back and forth, or are you able to go in and out of the country? Or?
Well, I'll be there for the whole month of January to finish filming. I can go there 6 months out of the year, being there 3 months at a time with 3 months out. But I have sold my place, and now I did it all legally, and now I'm trying to get the money out, which is not easy. But it just wasn't going to work out for me to be able to stay there. And also, the city has changed quite a bit. It's you know, I lived in Manhattan when crack came in. I lived in Hell's Kitchen, and I went through that. And then crack came into Salvador, and it's right in the throes of it right now. So, you know, when I go out to film, I go out with guards. You know, I hire my friends to be my guards.
Brazil is not too safe right now, then, is what you're saying.
Well, Salvador was safer than Rio or Sao Paulo, but now it is far more dangerous because, you know, the Olympics is coming up, and that's coming up in Rio, and the government has really moved in to that city and made it safer. Salvador, on the other hand, the World Cup is going to be there of soccer, so they are, you know, that's going to be, I think, in 2016, so they are trying to prepare for that. But Brazil is going through a lot of growing pains, and their economy is booming, and I hope that it does continue to boom. And there's been grave poverty there, but that is getting better. Yeah, the drug situation is going to be challenging until that can be gotten under control somehow.
So
in New York, it changed.
So you're back. So you're not trying to be a Brazilian anymore. You've come back to the United States.
No, it just couldn't work out for many reasons because, just because of what's happened to our economy and the cost of airfare back and forth, because I was going to continue to come back here and work. And just everything's changed. We all know that. We're all living in a new reality now, and especially musicians and artists. And that's why something like these crowdsourcing funding projects are so amazing for us, because we've all, people that are sort of niche and world fusion or not in a big pop music category, have seen severe decline in the sale of CDs and in the ability to be able to do concerts, and we've seen many venues closing up. And in our culture, musicians and artists really survive on people's disposable income.
Right.
And we're all suffering from loss of that.
Yeah, loss of discretionary income. So the first thing that goes are the arts. Just like in school. So, all right, so you're trying to make this incredible film. You know, Lane, I really feel like you're someone who's always uncovering hidden history. You know, you did that with, you know, revealing about the frame drummers and women of the Mediterranean. Now you're trying to, you know, uncover this incredible, you know, tradition down there in Brazil. Have you ever stopped to think about that you're this, you're like an incredible archaeologist or sleuth or a historian certainly, but different. You know, you're uncovering what's laid buried for so long. I don't know. Have you ever thought about that much?
Well, certainly, but as I listen to you and what comes up within my own mind and a response is that I've just been uncovering parts of myself that have been buried and lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ancient tradition of women drummers, the ancient tradition of women as priestesses. So it's always been something within myself that is very magnetized and drawn first to the ancient Mediterranean world and to Brazil and to these rhythms and to these people. I'm very, very moved by the people that I have met in Brazil. One thing I want to say about this tradition, the suffering in Brazil is much higher level than the suffering here in the United States. Yet when you arrive there, what you experience is this kind of joy and buoyancy in people's spirits, so just simple joy in being alive. And you go, we have so much more, and our lives are so easier, yet we don't have this kind of joy. In fact, Bahia is called the land of happiness. And you go, well, why is this? Why are people so overall more uplifted? And my belief is it goes back to these roots of the African spiritual tradition, people who were brought over here, many, you know, remnants from different tribes. By the time they arrived in Brazil, they had lost everything but what they had within their minds, their spiritual beliefs, their art traditions, and their musical rhythms and chants. And they were able to put those back together and preserve them. And, of course, they're changed. And we have a wonderful excerpt video up by Mariela Santiago, one of our main singers, and she's talking about the spiritual concept of Axé. And it's just amazing because she just keeps going, no, it's not that. I can't put it in words. It's beyond words. But in a simple way to talk about it, you can say that it is like prana from the Hindu and yoga tradition or chi from the Taoist Chinese tradition. It is the energy behind manifestation. It's the energy of life. And in the African tradition, it's behind the concept of centered, grounded, cool and calmness. And that got translated here in the United States into the jazz concept of cool. So these basic spiritual beliefs and the rhythms and the dance is what got people through this terrible heritage of slavery, which went on much longer in Brazil than it did in the United States. And then the aftermath of that was really pretty severe. People were hardly beyond slavery for, you know, even today, people live very hard lives. Yet, I believe through the roots of samba, which is the candomblé tradition, these rhythms give people a joyous experience of being together in synchronized entrainment. And there's a wonderful book called Keeping Together in Time by William McNeil that talks about this phenomena of people doing rhythmic, entrained movement, singing, chanting and dancing together that lifts them up beyond the ordinary and gives them a sense of well-being and community among themselves.
Well, you know, you're making me think about, when you go to a Baptist church and you see these wonderful choirs, and I mean, let's face it, you know, it's the black people in the United States that have been so oppressed. And, of course, like you said, they also have their jazz, you know, and through, you know, and maybe through jazz, you know, that has been a source of their bliss, their joy, their giving them the ability to go on and overcome. So we're talking about music on a whole different level, you know, rather than just something for entertainment purposes. You know, we're talking about something that's a lifeblood, something that keeps people going, keeps them alive, keeps them from being depressed, gives them hope.
Well, we get right down to the key issues about what is, you know, an enjoyable life. What is music? You know, why do people sing? Why do people make rhythmic sound? Why do people make instruments? I mean, it's the great mystery to me. And I've lived my whole life trying to be around people that make incredible music, particularly incredible drummers, but also incredible melodic players, flute, sitar, violin. I don't know. That's what gives joy to my life, rather than things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sitting here in the middle of my video studio. One of my close collaborators, Tommy B, you know, he looked at my 88 Honda that I've had since 1988. I love this car. And he goes, your bumper sticker should be my other car's my video studio. You know, I have, you know, I don't need a new car. I do need this equipment to make these films, and I'm very happy to be able to sit here and edit it. I've been doing everything on the films until Daniel showed up, just everything. You know, doing all the filming myself, doing all the editing myself, and I had put it on hold because just because of all the health challenges and just not taking it so strenuously in my life anymore. And Daniel found my work through the internet, came to work with me, and he loved this music that he heard that I had recorded for this project. It's just been sitting here. You know, it's in the can. I haven't done anything with it. And he said, we have to get this out. Let's finish this film. And it had started out to be music videos, and now it's morphed into this whole sort of, this is an experimental documentary. It's almost a dream about the Orishas and what are these deities. It's not a documentary in a normal sense. And I didn't just, like, hire these people to dance and then just, you know, present that. Okay, here's the dance and here's the music. No, when you look even at the trailer, you can see it's becoming much more dreamlike and archetypal and primordial, especially like, say, Shango, the god of fire, because I've worked on that video quite a bit. And it starts out like a shaman working with fire, and then he evolves into being a priest working with fire. Then he becomes a king, a ruler, and then he evolves into being a deity. And so I sort of try to show this on a totally archetypal level. I have some amazing performers in that, and including Fumagao, who was one of the most important folkloric dancers in Bahia, and he passed away after I filmed him. And this is the most important piece of film that exists of him.
Wow, so this is unique on so many levels.
Yeah.
So, Wayne, probably, I guess maybe it goes without saying that you probably attribute your love of the music and the healing aspects of the music, you know, what it does for you. It's probably gotten you through your health challenges. Would you say yes?
Oh, absolutely. Being in the studio with Tadeo Mascareñas, who's my engineer and producer, and his studio is called Casa de Máquinas, the House of Machines. It's the happiest time of my life, is being in the studio and creating the music and having these amazing musicians in. First for that project, the Orisha project, which is traditional. I don't play on that. And then for my three CDs, where I play with a lot of the traditional drummers, but we make a fusion of their patterns and my patterns, and it's the happiest time in my life. In fact, I went through surgery down there. Like 2 days after surgery, I was back laying on the couch in the studio listening to the mixes. I mean, it really, nothing makes me happier than that, actually. Nothing
like
makes
medicine.
Me happier.
Well, now you said, I believe you said recently when we exchanged emails that you just finished working on a project with Pat Monahan.
I had been a part of a compilation of hers back in the 90s.
Oh.
She put together a book called Irish Spirituality, and it was from Irish writers in Ireland and then people of the Irish diaspora. You know, I'm a sort of a mix of Irish, English, Scottish, and a little bit of French thrown in, a seventh generation Floridian. Some of my ancestors were people who had a choice to come with a little bit of money to the New World, but probably a great deal of them came over as indentured servants. And settled in Florida and pioneered, and it was rugged, and the history is not good because that was all opened up. It had belonged by treaty to the Native people, and Congress passed an act called the Armed Occupation Act, and that's how pioneers got into Florida. So it's a brutal history of all that we all share. I just happen to have it, you know, my family goes back long enough to have been involved in a part of that. So that was my story out of all going back to my Irish ancestors that came over in the 1700s. I was the first woman that really got to choose what to do with my life and my family. And I could be an artist and a musician. And that was my story and connected to the frame drum. And that was my part of that project with Patricia.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. You said something at the top of the interview that, I don't know if you feel like delving into that a little bit. It's a little bit off topic, maybe, but maybe it's important. You know, you said that you were talking about the difficulties with your health, the difficulties of having to go down to Brazil and not being able to get citizenship down there and all of the challenges you were going through. But what you said that really sort of piqued my interest, and I think might be useful to people out there to just chat about it a little bit, is, you know, you said maybe from the outside looking in, this all looks so romantic and glamorous. I'm not sure those were your words, but that's...
That's a good description.
It's not always the way it looks, but yet you still,
Most
still...
people would opt out of my life in 5 minutes. The truth is.
But, you know, I think that's important to talk about. About Lane, because you know what, people, it's the same thing with me. You know, people see my website and they get an impression of another person's life from looking at their website, or the fact that maybe they've published a book or they have a CD out, and maybe sometimes they get depressed because their life is hard, and they don't realize that you still have to struggle through those hard times in order to have your bliss. It's almost as if you have to fight to have your bliss, maybe sometimes, that the good comes along with the bad, but it's whether you focus on the glass half full or half empty. I don't know. Do you think there's a lesson in there just to,
to
keep us uplifted? That
I'll tell you what Jose Angelis said. This is my co-producer on this in the beginning, Jose Angelis Silvestri. And as we were working on this, and her life is very similar to mine, we travel a lot. I don't travel as much anymore. It's too hard on my immune system. But we do a lot of things people come to study with us, and they love what we're teaching them, and they love what we're transmitting, and they perceive our lives to probably be in a certain way. And Jose Angelis said, for people like us, while she was talking about our project here, she said, the orishas, the deities, the creative forces of the universe, not just the Africans, but however you want to think of the creative forces of the universe, are constantly talking to everybody. And not everybody hears them. Maybe their minds are focused on something else, and they're not hearing the divine voice, not particularly in words, but, a calling. That's a good thing to say. And then there are people that do hear, but they can't function as translators. And then there are people that hear and can function as translators and who have maybe specific gifts, like Jose Angelis has this incredible gift of dance and choreography. I have the gift of being of percussion and music, and also being an artist and being able to create film. So we become the translators. However, she said, we have to sacrifice our lives to that. We sacrifice, to quote, the normal life. The comfort, the joys, maybe a stable relationship, because this has always been my priority, is to follow my creative impulse, to manifest my creative impulse. And it's been my priority over everything else. So it's really what I have over everything else. So I don't know if that answers your question enough. I wouldn't change my life, but you know, it's not that I'm unhappy. I'm actually happy, and I've really learned how to deal even with having a disease like cancer that just keeps coming back. Right now I've worked out this deal. I go, look, you know, the tumor's here. I go, look, if I die, you die. We need to stay here together. Let's work out a little, like, be roommates in this body. Let's just carry on, you know. And if
let me get my work done.
I have to make, you know, self-healthcare a priority, and I can keep going, you know, before I just sort of burned right through myself, you know, and that's the difference. And I think that happens to a lot of people that dedicate themselves to their creative
Well, but I think you're an inspiration, though, Lane, you know, because here you could have just, you know, given this all up or, as I was saying, you know, you have that calling and you're dedicated to it. And at great cost, you continue to persevere. And I think it's important not only to, you know, for people to see that tenacity, because so often people give up when things get hard. You know, maybe it's because they're giving up because it isn't really their true calling. I don't know. But it just seems important to say that, you know, even though your life might look wonderful because you're traveling here and there and you're teaching and you're getting to follow your bliss and do all of this, you know, it does come with a price. You know, if life isn't perfect, that there are trade-offs, trade-offs in life sometimes. And, you know, when people think that their lives aren't perfect or it's not going exactly as maybe they visioned, maybe it's helpful for them to know that, that's just the way it is sometimes, you know?
You know, just as you're talking, I would recommend to your readers a book called Savage Beauty, The Life of Edna St. Vincent Millay. And that, the only thing I'm addicted to is green tea, sometimes a little coffee. She had real alcohol problems and later morphine problems, but if you read that, it's an amazing biography of her, and you really, she was a huge, like, performance artist, star, but it sort of burned her up. And reading that and how hard it was for her to do those kind of performances and travel, I really identified with that. So that's a very beautiful book, and it's also a very beautiful story about a woman. I knew she was a poet, but I did not know the effect that she had on our culture at that time. So Savage Beauty, The Life of Edna St. Vincent Millay by Nancy Milford. I really recommend that.
Sure,
but one thing I want to tell all the listeners is we have something really exciting coming up on December 8th. And I'm hoping that you're going to be able to call in for 2 or 3 minutes and be a part of it. And we're going to be doing a live streaming event on December 8th at 3 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time about these traditions of the ancient frame drummers and the Brazilian priestesses. And let me just, I'm going to be, you'll tune in and you'll join us and you'll see, it's on Google Hangout, which is something like Skype, but you'll be able to see my desktop, so you'll be able to see my whole slide lecture on the ancient frame drummers and the symbols connected to them. And it's called The Bindu, the Omphalos, the Goddess, and the Frame Drum, The Mysteries of the Bee Priestess. And I'm going to really give it in a condensed form in about 30 minutes. We have Rosângela lined up in Brazil, so she's going to be speaking to us on the tradition of the priestesses from Brazil. Marguerite Rigoglioso, speaking of the divine birth mystery teachings, reawakening the ancient Mediterranean priestesshoods. Betty Lynn Schwab, a minister who has just retired from being the national coordinator of worship and music for the United Church of Canada, and she's dedicated to recapturing the ancient frame drumming for worship today. Christine Stevens is going to speak on the healing power of rhythm, 3 to 5 minutes. Michelle Gould, an amazing astrologer, on the heavenly aspects behind these traditions, and some more other people that I'm waiting to get confirmed. So I'm very excited about that. I'm really excited. We'll
so
be showing videos.
How does someone tune in? It is, and does it cost anything? Is it
it's
free?
It's free. It's absolutely free. And, of course, we're going to be speaking about the film a lot and how important that is. But if people are interested, they should go to my website, LayneRedmond.com, LayneRedmond.com, and get on my mailing list. It's right there on the homepage. Sign up, and we'll be sending out all instructions of how to do this. So we're totally excited. I'm sure we'll have some technical little glitches, but it also becomes a YouTube video archive right away, so people will be able to see it at any time if they can't join us at 3 p.m. on Saturday, December 8th, Eastern Standard Time. That'll be 5 p.m. in Brazil and noon out in California. So we're going to have people from all over calling in.
And
I'm really, really excited about it.
So how long will it last? Is it for an hour, or how long does
it go on? I would say we'll probably go for an hour and a half or so.
Okay.
You know, it'll
all
go
right.
on for a while.
Because
we have a lot of people.
So does that somehow help you raise money for the Kickstarter program?
Well, we'll be talking about it a lot. And
okay.
we'll be talking about these ancient traditions. And, yes, I hope it doesn't go to the last minute of us trying to get the last of the money. And my nerves are not going to take that. We need to get to our goal sooner than the last minute. So I'm hoping by then that we'll have raised the rest of the $10,000. And I would also like to speak to where that money is going to go, because I've had a few questions and I've had a few people act like I might be raising money to pay myself a whole lot for in sort of exploiting these Brazilians while I'm making all this money. Well, anybody that's ever made a film knows that $30,000 is not going to
It's a drop in the bucket.
Oh, my God. I've already put, over the years, $15,000 of my own money. I go and teach my workshops, and then I would take that money down there. Okay, everybody but Jose Angela, who was doing it with me. And everybody's been paid so far. And paid the studio costs. You know, that's a lot of money to record in a studio. And the film, I'm doing all the editing. It's going to be able to cover some more of the cost. I'll be able to pay Jose Angela. I'll be able to pay some camera people. We're going to rent a theater to try to film Jose Angela's dance, and different people will be going to Candomblé houses. There's a wonderful woman I hope to get to interview, Makota Valchina. She is a priestess, but she's also a social activist, and she's made this very important statement: I'm not a descendant of slaves. I'm a descendant of people forced into slavery. And I want her in the film. And so we'll be making donations to her Candomblé house. Every time I've gone to a Candomblé house, I've made a substantial donation to the house. So, one person said, well, are you going to be giving the proceeds of the CD to the musicians? I hope that by some strange fluke, we make some money selling the CD. But one thing you have to keep in mind is these days, you don't ever recover the cost of creating the CDs. My last three CDs, I probably spent about $5,000 creating each one of them, and I haven't recovered the cost of that. I used to be able to, but not anymore. So these days, people do a Kickstarter. But this is what happens with a crowdfunding program like this. All the people that would buy your CD afterwards are buying it in advance. So unless by some fluke our film gets picked up and becomes something extremely successful, which at this point I'm 60 years old. I've been through this for 30 years thinking, oh, the next CD is really going to do it. It's really going to break out, and many people around the world will support it, and there'll be some finances. And that it could happen, but it hasn't happened, and I can't even begin to think that that might happen. So all the money that's coming in from our supporters now is the money that would come afterwards. That's the deal with the Kickstarters. You really tap out the people that are going to buy your CD in advance. They make it possible for you to make your project now.
Yeah,
that's
instead of making
thing.
It and then hoping to get paid afterwards.
Exactly. So, but another thing, I just finished reading Tolstoy's War and Peace, and he talks about these movements in time and history of waves of people coming together and creating something, maybe a war or a cultural movement. But I started to see this whole event of doing this Kickstarter as this massive wave starting to take form of energy that's going to bring this film into being. And I've got to tell you, personally, I have never asked for money before. I have never wanted to ask for money before. It has always seemed like the worst possible thing. I'm a Southern woman. We're supposed to act like money doesn't exist. And I had to drop that within 3 or 4 days. It was like the fastest spiritual transformation of anything I've undertaken in my life, far beyond any meditation retreats. And I saw it as an egotistical thing finally. Oh, I can do it without any help. But now I know that I cannot do this without everybody's help. And, a dollar, put your energy into this wave. And I have had the most amazing emails and responses from people who might have seen something I did 15 years ago and still so moved about it. They're making quite a real sacrifice to make a really generous donation. And I mean, that is happening over and over again. But it's just as important to me as when people make $1 or $10, because that's what it is. We're all putting our money. And since I've started this, I have contributed to so many other people's projects. I will always contribute to other people's projects now. It's been incredibly heartwarming. It really has. And then, you know, it's really an experience of who supports you and who doesn't. And you cannot get into thinking about that. You just have to be grateful for all the experiences that you're having and how
Absolutely.
It's transforming me.
It's the journey. Well,
totally.
Well, Lane, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, close off our interview tonight with, how do you pronounce it, Oxun, O-X-U-N?
Oshun.
Oshun. Oh, that's Oshun.
Oshun.
Okay.
Yeah, the goddess of Sweetwater.
Okay, with Oshun. But before we say goodnight and let listeners, you know, just sort of have a taste of the wonderful rhythms, is there anything else you'd like to share with listeners? You know, maybe give that date again that you need the $10,000 by. What's the deadline?
December 16th, but please don't wait.
So please don't wait. Yeah, if you're going to do it, send money now.
System. Yeah.
Well, you know, people could think about maybe making a donation in the name of someone that they would normally, you know, go out and look. Don't go out and buy a candle or a book for somebody. Make a donation to Lane's film in their name, and and send them something, and you know, say this is what I contributed to in your name. You know, you'll be a part of history. You know, there's a good idea for something meaningful, you know, meaningful holiday gift instead of us, you know, giving things to each other that we really don't need.
That's a wonderful idea, honey. That is really a great idea.
Yeah, maybe you should even send an email around about that.
I will. We have to keep thinking of how to keep putting the project back out in front of people. And people are picking it up on blogs and different events. And I've already one woman has asked me to be a part of a film festival next July. She just loved even just the trailer. And if people go to my website, they'll see the video right there. They can click on the link, and they can go to our Kickstarter page, and they can listen to all the music. There's no excerpts. Daniel insisted we put the entire, all of the music up. So all 8 pieces in their entirety is up on our Bandcamp page. But you can find that by going to our Kickstarter page, and then under my picture on the right, you can see a little picture of me. You'll see their website, Ashe Orisha, Dreaming Awake. You can go there. You'll find the link. And, oh, actually, I think right on our Kickstarter page, we've put the link to the music. It's right at the top. But on the website, there's more about the traditions. So there's a lot of information just on the Kickstarter page. We worked really hard on that.
You know, Lane, as always, you're very generous. You know, you're very generous on so many levels. And, you know, I hope the universe rewards you and you get what you need to make this film sincerely. I'm gonna go look at your links and you look at your trailer, and I promise I will definitely make a donation to your film.
Oh,
and
Karen.
I hope you manage to get the money. And like I said, listeners out there, don't give some gift to somebody they don't need. Contribute to Lane's film. And, you know, Lane, maybe there's a way you can actually put out an email blast, you know, to everybody on your database and say something like that. You know, maybe there's a way that they can get a link to click or something where they can tell somebody, look, this is your holiday gift. In your name, I've donated to this Kickstarter project. I mean, I don't know if that's possible, if you'd even want to do
it,
but just an idea. Yeah.
And they will get the pledge gifts. They'll get the downloads or the CDs or whatever level that person donates. They would get it all. They would get what that person chooses.
Yeah, there you go. They would have that gift to give as well. Okay.
I'm so grateful for you to do. This is a special show that Karen scheduled just for me. It's not in her regular schedule, and I am so incredibly grateful. And I so look forward. I really want you to participate to talk about your program for 3 to 5 minutes on our live streaming thing. I would love that. I would just be so happy.
Well, I'll see if I can figure it out. I'll email you.
Okay.
We'll see if we can work it out. But, Lane, thank you so much. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for the inspiration you are from, you know, how you're battling with your illness to the wonderful books you've written and the classes you teach and the CDs. And, I mean, you have contributed so much in this lifetime, Lane. I mean, you have done more in your lifetime than some people do in 10 lifetimes. And, you know, you deserve all goodness flowing toward you. So so let me close tonight's show for you with the Oshun cut, and I'm looking forward to going and listen to the rest of the music. I mean, putting all of that there on your website, that was so generous in itself. I mean, for people to just
be able to
go there, you're incredible, Lane. You really are. You deserve all the best. So good luck with your
project. Well, I'm going to be totally open to the blessings you're bestowing on me right now, totally.
Well, you know, good luck with it all. I'll keep tabs on you to see how it's all going, and keep in touch. Let me know how it goes, and if you want to come back on the show and you know, let us know how the filming goes and all of that, you just let me know, okay?
I'll call in from Brazil. We'll broadcast from Brazil.
Wow, okay, cool. All right, so anything you want to say to introduce this cut before, then I'll just end the show with the,
cut
ends.
This is Oshun, the goddess of sweet water, fresh water. She's the goddess of love and beauty. And it's sung by Mariela Santiago, and she's making the vocal arrangements on that. And also Gilmar is singing, and some other vocalists. The drummers are from Ballet Folklorica da Bahia. Let's see, what else can I tell you about it? Oh, and the rhythm is Yijesha, which is one of the most famous rhythms from Bahia. And you can see its relationship to samba. So it's extremely beautiful. I'm so excited that that's what we're going to go out on.
And so what would this be used for? Is this to dance to? Is this for a sacred ritual?
This is played and sung. You go to the teheru, the temple. The ceremony starts. You do the first song. When you go to to the band camp, it's the call. And that song calls all the deities. The initiates are in the center, dancing in a circle. The congregation is around, sits around and chants and sings. They don't dance, just the initiates. And then they dance for maybe an hour and a half, doing the different songs to the different deities. And this is to Oshun. And then the deities come. They come down and take they come and become embodied in the initiates, and they've been training for many years, 7 years minimum, to learn how to use the energy of the deity that chooses you. You can't choose, the deity chooses you, and then once the deity has chosen you, then you work with the priestess or priest for 7 years until you learn how to use that energy. And then you are the host of, for that deity for your community. And so after the deities come, they come and they go in the back and they come back out in the traditional clothing of their deities, and then they would dance and sing this dance and go around and hug and maybe communicate with the different members of their community. But as far as the people in the Teheru, they consider these people now to be the deities.
Wow.
So this is the song that brings Oshun down. And like Tadeo, my engineer, there's three drums and an agogo bell play that's played, and just the drums and chanting, that's all. And the biggest drum, there are atabakis, and the biggest drum is improvising. And Tadeo said it's creating the matrix up into the heavens for the deities to come down. The drummers do not go into a trance because they're creating the matrixes, the channels, the passageways. And, you know, I've been at ceremonies that lasted 8 hours. It's incredible. So this
wow.
is a very beautiful. Now, you go to a Teheru, you'll hear this song sung like this, but it would be like at any church with people all singing maybe out of key. And so what we did was we got some of the greatest musicians in Bahia who are also members of Candomblé houses, from different houses, but they are from the tradition. And then we just recorded at the highest levels, and then Mariela made these incredible, exquisite vocal arrangements. You'll hear it. It's amazing.
Okay.
And beautiful. This music is amazing. People really, for $10, getting this music, somebody said on my Facebook page that this was the most important cultural and musical event in years. That's what he felt. And in a
wow.
way, this music is. And I can say it because this is not my music. It's not my music. But I'm so moved to be the person that can pay for it to happen and to also, you know, help shape it by
okay.
choosing who comes in and sings. So anyway, I'm so excited. I'm so happy that you're presenting this. You're the first person. You're presenting this to the world for the first time, dear.
Well, thank you so much. And, that's truly an honor. I appreciate that. And I hope your being on the show tonight, I hope it's helped in some way to help you get closer to your goal. Well, I will say goodnight, Lane. It has been a pleasure as always.
We have had pledges. We have had pledges, so... People
Wonderful.
Are pledging.
Good,
okay.
good, good. All right. So listeners, here we go. This is Oshun, and enjoy. And please go to Lane's website and to her Kickstarter and pledge what you can. Instead of those crappy holiday gifts, make a pledge to the film. All right. Here we go, Oshun.
Ora iê, iê, ora iê, iê, ô minha dó lá, ora iê, iê.
Hey!